Studio 360.
In 1949, 30-year-old J.D. Salinger let one of his stories be turned into a movie. It was so unsuccessful in every sense, such a fiasco, that Salinger refused to let filmmakers anywhere, anytime, near his work again. But refusing Hollywood just makes Hollywood love you all the more, and crypto Salinger material still shows up in movies all the time. The children in Wes Anderson's movie The Royal Tenenbaums in 2001 had a lot in common with the Glass family children who appear in a lot of Salinger's fiction. And in Field of Dreams, the reclusive author character Terrence Mann, played by James Earl Jones, was inspired by Salinger's reclusiveness.
I don't give interviews, and I'm no longer a public figure. I just want to be left alone. So back off.
Same thing in the movie Finding Forrester, with the reclusive author character played by Sean Connery.
There'll be no questions about me, my family, or why there was only one book.
But the new movie Rebel in the Rye has the most J.D. Salinger-esque character yet, J.D. Salinger.
Why do we keep coming here? I can't stand all these flits and phonies.
That's Nicholas Holt playing Salinger. It's the story of how Jerome David Salinger went from being an on-the-make, nightclubbing Manhattan undergraduate to serving in World War II and seeing the horrors of war to becoming the mythologized author of The Catcher in the Rye.
All I know is how to be a writer.
Rebel in the Rye is the directorial debut of the actor and remarkably successful screenwriter Danny Strong. As an actor, Strong appeared in lots of shows, including Gilmore Girls and Mad Men. He's co-creator and executive producer of the hit Fox series Empire, and he wrote the first two Hunger Games movies. He also wrote the screenplays for Recount about the 2000 presidential election and Game Change about the 2008 presidential election. And prolific, productive, talented Danny Strong is here with me now. Welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get to J.D. Salinger, I want to talk about other stuff you've done. Empire, which you co-created with Lee Daniels a few years ago. I believe you're a white guy.
Sure. So they say.
how did you come to do that?
It was literally a random idea I had one day. I was in Los Angeles driving around, and on the radio, there was a news piece about some massive deal Puffy had just closed.
That would be Sean Puffy Combs.
Exactly. Mr. Combs to you and I. I just thought it was so simplistic. Hip-hop is really cool. I should do something in hip-hop. It was literally just that thought popping in my head. It could be a musical, but it's a hip-hop musical. And then all of a sudden, I thought, oh, you know what I should do? I should do a hip-hop meets King Lear or The Lion in Winter. So, and then literally once I thought that, which was about 30 seconds after Hip Hop is Cool, I should do something in hip hop, the whole idea flooded into my head.
Don't forget to thank your cookie on this historic occasion.
Good.
Hello.
Vernon,
kiss my black ass.
You directed some of those episodes. Was the idea, oh, I control this show with Lee Daniels, I'll learn how to do it here, and then I can go make feature films?
Yeah. That was the hope, is that I've been wanting to direct a feature for many years and had optioned this J.D. Salinger biography several years before Empire existed.
Huh.
So I knew that I wanted to direct, and then when Empire actually went, I thought, wow, this could be a perfect opportunity to get my feet wet, is to direct an episode of Empire. And it was out of the studio, they have this rule that a first-time director can't direct a show in season one. That was it. And they said I couldn't direct. And then Lee Daniels said, listen, Danny, I'm going to Mama Rose this bitch. And he jammed it through. And 2 days later, they approved me to direct it.
Again, another is that a showbiz? I mean, I expect it's a showbiz term of art.
I'm going to Mama Rose this bitch?
Yeah.
No, that's a Lee Daniels term.
Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. And explain to our listeners who aren't familiar with the Broadway musical from which it comes, what that means.
So Mama Rose is from the musical Gypsy, and she's the ultimate stage mother.
Right.
So the idea is that he was going to be the ultimate stage mother and make sure
and you're Gypsy Rosalie?
And I'm Gypsy Rosalie.
So you read this Salinger biography because you had been a fan of Salinger's fiction?
I was a fan. I'm not an obsessive fan. I think I bought it because he was this great American enigma when I was in high school. And as I was reading the book, I was so stunned by his story. I knew so little about him. It was literally all I knew was he'd written these works and he was quote-unquote a recluse, and I knew a little
bit. And the voice
bit,
of his generation.
Yeah, right, yeah. And a little bit about
and slept with a young woman when
Joyce
he was an old
Maynard,
man.
Yes. Right, yeah. I mean, that was basically it.
Yeah.
And when I saw that he was this charismatic, young, ambitious man of New York City.
The Stork Club.
Ladies, Una, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm Jerome David Salinger. My friends call me Jerry.
Which is the opposite of how you think of him, because you think of him as a recluse if you don't know much about
him.
That
he was always a hermit.
Yeah, yeah. And instead he was this and it reminded me not only of myself, but of all my friends that are writers, of how ambitious he was, what he went through, all the rejection. And I thought, oh, what a fun way to dramatize what it means to be a writer as I was reading it. And then all of a sudden, it takes a turn, which is World War II. And then the story went from, oh, this is fun, this is personal, to something that I found profound and sublime. The fact that The Catcher in the Rye, the story of a troubled teenager who's probably narrating this from a mental institution, although some people disagree with that, but my feeling is that's probably where he's narrating it from, was written—
And you indicate that.
Yes, was written by a veteran who had seen the darkest horrors of World War II, of human existence. I mean, was it the first wave at a concentration camp? The combat he saw, he was in D-Day, right? So to me, that is that the fact that this book that had changed so many lives, millions of lives for decades, came from trauma.
Even though it's the story of this callow kid who's never seen anything rough.
Exactly. Although there's, when you know his story, sprinkled throughout the book are moments that are so profound when you know that it was written by a veteran. So to me, that felt that it deserved to be a film. And it also, for me, explained the enigma. It explained what happened to him, why he went to the woods, why he stopped publishing, but yet would write for 50 years. And that, for me, his journey is that he reaches this writer nirvana, where it's the act of writing is all that matters, and he wants nothing else. He does not want to publish. He does not want to sell books. He does not want success or fame. He just wants to write. And that is, I think, a very, very different way than your average perception of J.D. Salinger is, which is he's a weirdo recluse.
Right. One presumes, and tell me if I'm mistaken in this presumption, that J.D. Salinger would have hated the idea of any such film.
Oh, of course. I mean, he would have loathed it. I mean, this is literally the opposite of how he lived his entire life. So I guess that begs the question, well, then why do it? And I think there are some people that are very offended about the film, that the film was made at all. My feeling is twofold. One, it would have been not very nice to do if he was alive, that this would have been very painful for him and would have caused him great angst and anger, and who knows what it would have caused him. However, he's no longer with us. He's a major historical figure whose life deserves and will be explored, or he has been. The cat's already out of the bag. There was a documentary called Salinger. But more significantly than all of that, I think his story is potentially very inspiring to people, very inspiring to writers, to artists, and to veterans, or anyone that suffered trauma.
Right. Before you were an incredibly successful writer, and before you were a director, you were an actor. Do you say I am an actor, or is that in the past now?
Well, I still act from time to time.
You're acting now, in a sense.
Right now.
You suddenly got on everybody's radar in Mad Men. You played this Danny Siegel.
Mad Men was after I'd quit acting.
Really?
Yeah, so I quit when my writing career kicked in, which was the script for Recount, the HBO movie.
Right.
And then that got made.
About the
2000 election. It got made, and then I became this in-demand writer.
Uh-huh.
And I moved to New York City, and I quit acting for 2 years. But Mad Men happened a few years after I'd, quote, quit. And I had my acting manager kept trying to get me to come back and keep working. And then he got me an audition for Mad Men. He said, "Will you go on this one?" And it was my favorite show. So I said, "Yeah, I'll do that." And then I got the part.
And you were wonderful again in that show near the end in the 60s.
When I came 60s, back as the movie producer?
Yes.
You're lucky I hate violence, man.
Really? I love it. You know, I was a boxer. There's nothing like finding that magic spot that'll drop a man to his knees. You know, unless he's already starting there.
That's my claim to fame, is I punched Roger Sterling in the balls.
Yeah.
It's a career highlight.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Danny Strong, king of all media, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Rebel in the Rye is now playing in theaters around the country.